The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show featuring Gogo the Chimp. Nothing like a chimp to liven up the radio show. Easy there. Go. No, Gogo, no!
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. I warned you that after Brandon Gill, we would invite Albin Sader on the program. Now, when I invite John Zmirek on the program, we say release the Kraken. I don't know what to say, Albin. You're so nice. Release the Culkin,
Macaulay Culkin.
I don't know. I don't know. You know what? You're just nice. There's no releasing happening. It's just wonderful to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I would say just crack the walnuts, maybe something like that.
Something like that. So you and I, we always have a lot to talk about. Let's focus on the fact that you've written an article. Where is it published?
It's at American Thinker, AmericanThinker.com, and it's called Time to Deep Six, the Democrats' Brand of Democracy.
Yeah. The other day, I looked on Twitter and somehow, I don't know how it came into my Twitter feed, but some Democrat organization is pushing to abolish the Electoral College. Now, if you understand this, folks, this is saying actually like I want to abolish American democracy and free and voting, and I want to abolish the Constitution. The reason we have an electoral college is a little complicated, but it is at the heart of why we're not ruled by a mob or ruled by it's at the heart of everything, in terms of the way the Constitution was structured. The Democrats want to abolish it because they know that they could take over if they abolish it. They're always talking about the popular vote. Well, the rules are not about the popular vote. The rules are about the Electoral College. They don't like the rules, so they want to abolish it. And so they keep talking about Trump and those who would vote for Trump as being the enemies of democracy. And what's satanic about it is that everything they propose is calculated to end our form of government, democracy, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, it's a republic, but that's what they're about. But they keep accusing our side of wanting to do that. And it's gross. It's like it's so evil. It's like, you know, a rapist accusing his victim of being a rapist. It's actually very sick in any event. So, Albin, you've written an article about this at AmericanThinker.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I basically that is the premise of the article, basically, that the brand of democracy, in quotes, that the Democrats are pushing is basically, when you think about it, their definition more suits fascism than democracy. But I also start out with a brief history lesson. Of course, I learned the history from your book, If You Can Keep It. And it's about the fact that we're not even a democracy. Democracy is basically 51% of the people. They can tell the other 49%, hey, this is what you're going to do because we're in charge because there's more of us than there are of you. We are a constitutional republic. And that has to be drummed into people's brains, right? Because we have checks and balances. We have representatives. We have all kinds of good stuff to make sure that this brand of democracy being currently pushed by the Democrats does not take over the country.
All right, and I'm going to we'll give you an example of how what the Democrats are pushing is fascism. You ready for this? Here we go. If you didn't have the checks and balances and the Constitution and so on and so forth, and we just said everybody votes and majority rules, that's it. So let's say a lot of white people, 60% of the white people in the country said, we vote, that blacks have fewer rights than whites. Okay. It'd be like, well, that's the law of the land. And that's that. Not in America. In America, you have a constitution, and the constitution would not allow 60% of the people to impose a wicked, sick, racist agenda. That would not be allowed according to the constitution. But if the Democrats had their way, they could force people to live in a system with unjust laws. They don't care. They don't want the checks and balances. They want to impose their will. Now, when you want to impose your will, that's genuinely fascist. That's authoritarian. And think of the irony that they're accusing the MAGA movement, Trump, people who would vote for Trump, for being authoritarian. Now, I want to be real clear. They have less than no evidence of that. It's nonsense. It's rhetoric designed to scare ignorant people. And there are enough ignorant people in America who will be scared and say, oh, people keep saying he's an authoritarian. He's a fascist. I guess he is. What is the evidence of that? He was in there for 4 years. Biden said these things the other day. He was on Seth Meyers. They pumped him up with some drugs so that he could be coherent for more than 40 seconds. And I got to tell you, he was spreading these lies. And I sat there thinking, this is so despicable that the president of the United States, whether he stole the election or not, he now lives in the White House and he is spreading these lies. So the idea that Trump or people are uncivil, no one is less respectful of the opposition and of opposing views than Joe Biden. No one. It is so despicable, and it genuinely smacks of authoritarianism, of bullying. Yeah. But that's what they accuse Trump of. I mean, Albin, it's hard for me to even watch things like that. When I watched him, it was like the speech he gave with the lurid background accusing the MAGA movement of, you know, this is like from a year plus ago. But it's just so hard to watch. It's despicable. And it's shocking that a president would ever say such things. It's a stunning thing.
I think it's one of the rules of Saul Alinsky is that you accuse the other side of the thing that you are doing or that you are planning to do. Now, in here, I have a whole list of some of the things, and it's just a partial list. In my book, Obvious, I have an entire list, and even that's not an entire list because my book was written and it came out several months ago. They keep adding to the list of all the things they do that fascists would do. Okay,
we're gonna go over the article. It's in the American Thinker, AmericanThinker.com. We're talking to Albin Sadar. So, Albin, you have an article at AmericanThinker.com. Let's talk about that.
Yep. It's called Time to Deep Six, the Democrats' Brand of Democracy, because first of all, we're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. I think everybody listening to your program knows that by now by reading your book, if you can keep it. And of course, in my book, I cover a lot of this stuff as well. My book is Obvious, and Obvious is obviously out right now at fine at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, places like that. But in the article, the funny thing is the Democrats every day seem to reinvent ways of getting rid of free speech. And I start with not only that we're a constitutional republic, but the number one amendment, free speech, has been co-opted now by the left. And they either censor you or corral you or let you just speak in some kind of small conservative echo chamber. But they will not let your voice get out there unless you go onto Twitter, for example, and you can see everything that's going on.
And let's say why that they are in favor of censorship, because they are afraid of our ideas. I mean, they're genuinely afraid. If our ideas get a free airing, you know, and people actually have to think, they are going to side mostly with the ideas being put forth by those who love America. So if you don't love America and you have a different agenda, you're using fascist means to crush free speech.
Yeah. And I talk about how, you know, first of all, they squashed free speech in the leading up to the 2020 election. But then it took them, what, 3-4 days to rig and steal the election because Donald Trump was so popular in 2020, even more popular than he was in 2016. And right now he's more popular than he was in 2020 and 2016. But there are people out there that still say like, no, that can't happen here because we're not a third world country. We're not a country that steals elections. No, that does not happen here. But folks, it does happen here. It did happen here. And Trump on the campaign
Trail keeps hammering that home. He said there's two things that make a nation a sovereign nation. One is free and fair and honest elections. The other is a secure border. Now, we currently have an insurrection, as it were, going on the border, on the southern border. We have people coming in. Number one job of the government is to protect us from enemies inside and out. The enemies inside are the Democrat Party. The enemies outside are just the open border, whoever wants to come in. You're our enemy. Come on in. You're welcome in, because we're the Democrats now. We're in charge. You're going to help us here to take over free speech and free loving Americans. People that just want to be free and raise their family, for heaven's sakes.
Well, it's interesting because Joe Biden on Seth Meyers the other day, he continues to spread the lie. Albin Sader, my friend, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.
For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I am proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas, PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas, or call 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use the offer code Metaxas. Join me, make the switch today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas.
Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in real gold and silver online. In a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or shipped to your door. You have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. You'll see transparent pricing on each coin and bar. This puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit legacypminvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A true diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. This new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with a few clicks. Visit legacypminvestments.com to get started. You're going to love this free new tool they've added, legacypminvestments.com. Legacypminvestments.com. Check it out. Hey, folks, welcome back. It is my privilege to have back on the show Tim Barton, who is the head of Wall Builders. Certainly you've heard of Wall Builders. If you hadn't until now, congratulations. You've got a lot to look forward to. Wall Builders, they are heroes. David Barton, of course, Tim Barton's dad, who started it. Tim Barton, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you.
For my audience, because you've got a book out, I want to talk about the brand new book, but for those in my audience who don't know what Wall Builders is, could you talk about that for a moment?
Absolutely. Our main focus is to teach American history and work to restore a biblical foundation. We have what's considered the largest private collection of original documents from American history. We have over 100,000 things, largely from before 1812. So we have actual writings, letters, journals from George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, any founding father you can name. We have some of their writings, and we just spend time going through their writings and ultimately in American culture today, trying to preserve the Declaration, Constitution, the Bill of Rights, preserve American liberties, but helping Americans remember where we came from and what the founding fathers trying to accomplish, what America was all about, the American dream, the American ideology, all the things that are under attack today, seemingly from people who want to destroy and eradicate what America was founded and intended to be. And so at Wall Builders, we work to restore those things by helping educate Americans and going back to that biblical foundation that made America so unique and successful.
When did your dad, David Barton, start Wall Builders?
It was back in the 80s, I think 1987, 1988. is when he got started. And actually, it was really an investigation into the Supreme Court decision from 62 and 63, where Abington Shemp, Murray Curlett, where they said that really we shouldn't have the Bible in schools. The year before, they said no prayer in schools. And what they had said was the founding fathers never intended for the Bible or prayer to be in schools because they wanted there to be a separation of church and state. My dad asked at the time when we would have said it was a Holy Spirit-led question, but really a logical question of if the founding fathers didn't want Bible or prayer in schools, why didn't they take it out when they were in charge? And of course, they didn't. And it's because they are the ones who worked to put the Bible in schools, who wanted there to be that biblical Christian foundation, because they knew the way that freedom could thrive in America, the way the Republic could exist and maintain and actually grow and be strong, would be if there was a proper moral foundation. And they knew there's no greater morals than those outlined in the Bible, which is why every founding father, even the ones who we could argue maybe were not Christians, they still advocated for the morals taught by Jesus, the morals outlined in the Bible. And so as my dad began to discover some of this information, it contradicted everything he had learned growing up. And he just began sharing it with people. And it was very informative to them as well, because everybody had, in his generation, largely received the same bad public school education, that the founding fathers were irreligious. They wanted a separation of church and state. They were a bunch of immoral people. They really maybe weren't the honorable people that they'd been led to believe. And as he started this journey through studying American history with original documents, not just what some professor, some academic had written in the last 10 years, he said, let's go back and read their actual writings. The journey started more than 30 years ago, and now we have this incredible collection, and we're able to tell a lot of stories that Americans don't know, and certainly it's a different narrative than what's being promoted to the rising generation today.
And the website is wallbuilders.com?
Yes, sir.
Well, I have to say, you know, I want to talk to you about the new book, but it's fascinating just hearing you talk about this, because a lot of people aren't clear on how it happened that we got to where we are today. And I am really of your father's generation, where I remember that we were taught the wrong definition of the separation, the wall between church and state. In other words, the whole idea of separation of church and state was the idea was to protect the church from authoritarian government. And
right.
So this has been twisted over time. The secular narrative has come out, and you had people, it started on some level in the 60s, where they decided, okay, we've got to take the Bible out of schools. We've got to take prayer out of schools. That is simply wrong. It's a misunderstanding of the founders. The founders wanted to protect the church from the state. So that's the famous line in Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptists. As we are talking, Tim, I am in Danbury, Connecticut. This is where I grew up, and I couldn't be prouder to come from Danbury, Connecticut, to be here today, because it was a letter to the Danbury Baptists, mm-hmm. where Thomas Jefferson, obviously writing a letter, this was not in one of the founding documents, but he uses the phrase, this wall, the separating church and state, and how that's been misinterpreted
yes.
and twisted. And it leads us to, you know, in the 80s, before your dad founded Wall Builders, Richard John Neuhaus wrote a book in 1984, The Naked Public Square, because he understood that this is what is happening, that you have this false view that says we've got to take God, we've got to take Christian values out mm-hmm. of the public square, out of our schools. And what he was saying is like, no, then you get the naked public square. And when you have the naked public square, what comes in, what fills the vacuum? Every kind of evil. So the founders never, never intended this, but it takes decades of drifting in the wrong direction before folks like Richard John Neuhaus and your dad, David Barton, step up and correct it. And your dad has spent decades correcting this. And it's just a joy to know that you, Tim, his son, are taking on the leadership, because there are so many Americans that still don't understand this. It's why
right.
I'm going through this with you right now, because I think that there are many people that they have some vague ideas about separation of church and state. What they don't really understand what is at stake and how this has been twisted. So, folks, if you remember nothing, remember that this concept of separation of church and state was to protect the church from the state, not to rip churches and Christian people out of influencing the state and politics. That's just an absolute horrible misunderstanding. Well, let's talk
about Eric, can I jump in right there and add something to that as well? So one of the things that's important to understand is the founding fathers believed in separate institutions, but not secular institutions, right? Because this is where some people would argue, no, they really wanted to separate the two. Well, no, they wanted separate institutions, but that's because they had come from England. And under the King of England, he was also the head of the Church of England, the Anglican Church. And so they said, look, we don't want the government controlling the church, controlling religion, which, by the way, for those paying attention, that's what happened in a lot of places during COVID, where you had governors controlling the churches, saying who could meet and where they could meet and how they could meet. And that's what the founding father said. No, we want separate institutions so our government, our political leaders can never come and control our religious beliefs. But their idea was never to secularize the government. And to give a couple of really easy examples, when the founding fathers first come together during the American Revolution, it was a Continental Congress. One of the very first acts of the Continental Congress is they call the nation to a time of prayer and fasting. Now, this is all the founding fathers, and they're working on becoming a separate nation. Well, they do that in the spring, and then that fall, they call for a day, a national day of prayer and thanksgiving. The following spring, they call for a day of prayer and fasting. That Thanksgiving, they call, or that fall, they call for a day of prayer and thanksgiving. This happened 13 times during the American Revolution alone, and this was a practice that was consistent from every single founding father who was a governor of a state. They did prayer proclamations calling on their state to times of prayer and fasting, and at other times, prayer and thanksgiving. By 1815, there had been more than 1,400 official government calls to prayer and either fasting or prayer and thanksgiving, but days of prayer. And so for those that think, no, the founding fathers didn't want religion in government, if they were these secular men they're accused of today and they didn't want God to be in government, then why did they pray all the time from their government positions and government capacity calling on their states or on the nation as a whole? Because we had presidents do this as well. This is where there's such a misnomer that the founding fathers wanted us to be secular. It's totally contradictory, not only to the example they set in their lives, but then you can go to someone like George Washington in his farewell address, where he says that the pillars of our political prosperity are religion and morality. And that's when he's leaving office the following year. John Adams is president. He writes a letter where he says that our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to the government of any other. They knew without religion, without the morals that come from religion, our nation would never work. So their idea was not to secularize America, but it was to make sure the government could never control our religious belief or practices, but not to say that we couldn't have God in government, just that government couldn't be the leaders of our church, of our faith, and our doctrine.
More and more people are waking up to the truth here, thanks to you, Tim Barton, and your dad, David Barton, and Wall Builders. Because many of us have just, you know, you kind of blithely drift along drinking the Kool-Aid, the secular Kool-Aid, and buying a lot of the lies without realizing that they are lies and realizing that you're helping to destroy America and American liberty by going along with them. So we're going to continue our conversation with Tim Barton of Wall Builders. His new book is The American Story. I wrote about this subject in my book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. And when I discovered it, when I wrote the book, If You Can Keep It, I was myself astonished at what I had not understood before. And so I wrote the book, If You Can Keep It, and I want to give it free to every American. I wish I could, because we really have to get this right. We have to be a part of the solution. When we come back, we'll talk more to Tim Barton. Don't go away.
Hey, this is Eric Metaxas. For years, I've told you about Nutramedics, a professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993. Nutramedics offers a variety of health bundles. Whether you want to support your immune system, improve your sleep, promote joint comfort, or detoxification support, Nutramedics has a health bundle right for you. The best part about Nutramedics, every year they donate a minimum of 50% of their profits to Christian charities and missions. That's right, 50% of their profits. Nutramedics has a goal of surpassing $100 million in giving by 2030. Many of you take supplements already. Switch to Nutramedics. It's the highest quality, and they donate 50% of their profits. Get 15% off by using the code ERIC during checkout. Go to Nutramedics.com and search health bundles. Support your health while helping others in need. Go to Nutramedics, that's NutraMedix.com, Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off. Again, Nutramedics, NutraMedix.com, Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. Yes, it's because of cancel culture, but as a result, they get to pass the savings on to you directly by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, some you may not even know about. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sandwich. $25. There's six-pack towels, just $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, the premium MyPillows with all new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. The amazing offer will not last long. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code ERIC, or call 800-978-3057. That's promo code ERIC, 800-978-3057, promo code ERIC, or go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ERIC. Welcome back, folks. I'm talking to Tim Barton of Wall Builders. You got to check out wallbuilders.com. Please do. What an amazing resource. So, Tim, you guys have written a new book called The American Story, Building the Republic. Is that the subtitle?
Yes, sir, it is.
Let's talk about that. The book just came out. The American Story. So what is in this book, The American Story?
Well, this is part two of a series. So if people are looking for The American Story, they might find the first one, The American Story, The Beginnings. And we really are trying to reteach Americans the history of America because we recognize the failure of our modern education system. And it's failing in lots of ways, but we focus on American history and we recognize that people that should be honored, that should be appreciated, that should be celebrated – we have done such a bad job in modern education that instead of appreciating George Washington, instead of celebrating people like that, we saw just a couple of years ago when people were tearing down the statues of George Washington, of Abraham Lincoln, of Frederick Douglass. They're tearing down, they're defacing, destroying statues of people that we should be appreciating. We should be thanking God that he brought people like that into this nation to be the leaders of our nation. And it's not because they were perfect people, but it's because of how God used them to do such incredible things. And so our vision for these books, our heart behind it, is we want to reintroduce people to the actual honest stories. Because one of the things that, I mean, Eric, you know so well, you're an incredible storyteller and you have done such a good job. So many books are very well done. People are hungry for stories. They're hungry for truth. But in modern education, when we go back and we are, in, you know, quote unquote, teaching American history, really what we're having kids do is memorize names, dates, and places. But even though if we say, do you know who George Washington is to most Americans? They would say, yeah, I know George Washington. But if we ask them, can you tell me a story about George Washington? Most Americans don't know anything about Washington or Adams or Jefferson or Madison. These are names we know, but we don't know their stories. And because we don't know their stories, a lot of times we are believing very false things about them, even about their character, about their motivations, where they wrote about these things. But we now have a modern perspective, and it's very different from what we used to try to do in teaching history, where we wanted to introduce the readers to who these characters were and tell their story. And this also follows along with the biblical narrative for those that are listening that are people of faith. If you remember the story of David and Goliath, and maybe some of those listening who aren't people of faith, they might still know this story. But David was the young boy who killed the giant Goliath. Well, if you go and read that in the Bible, if you go to 1 Samuel and you read the story of David and Goliath, it's interesting in the modern academic perspective, they would ask questions like, and what year did David kill Goliath? But if you read the Bible, you would not know in what year David killed Goliath, because right. The Bible does not tell us. Why? Because that's not the point of the story.
Yeah.
And what's happened in modern education is we've emphasized what should be the least significant details, and we have stopped telling the most important part of what history is, and that's learning the story. So we start with George Washington, and we go, which the first book goes from Christopher Columbus up through like the Constitutional Convention, George Washington becoming president, we become a nation. And we also tell some of the abolition movement along the way in the first book, because we were writing it when the 1619 Project came out, and we recognized how dishonest their story was. And so we said, okay, we cannot let them get away with all the lies they're telling, because there was a very strong abolition movement in America. In fact, the abolition movement that started in America was a movement that influenced so much of the work of the abolitionists around the world. When you go to guys like William Wilberforce, even in England, it's interesting. He corresponded with many Americans, but even in England, one of the phrases they used as they're arguing against slavery, against the slave trade, they used the phrase that all men are created equal. Well, guess where they learned that phrase? That's directly from the Declaration of Independence. And yet, most people have no idea that America had an abolition movement, or how strong it was, or the fact that every single northern colony had abolished slavery prior to 1804. And England didn't abolish slavery until 1833. So America's 30 years in front of when English, at least the northern colonies in America, are 30 years in front of when English did that. But Americans have no idea. Anyway, we cover some of that in the first book. The second book picks up with George Washington being president, and it goes through Andrew Jackson. And the reason we chose those first seven presidents to really dig deep and tell their stories, all seven of those men were part of the American Revolution. So all of them knew what America in theory was about, the birth of America as a nation. We're becoming our own constitutional republic, this independent nation. And we track their lives, really, again, reintroducing Americans to people that largely should be honored. But just like the Bible does, if you read the story of Abraham or Moses or King David, you're going to see in their life there's good, bad, and ugly in all of their lives, because they were just people. They were humans. And God used them in amazing ways, and they were really impressive in how God used them and what they accomplished. But they're just people. They weren't perfect. And yet, they did some of the most remarkable things that today, again, most Americans might know their names but don't know their stories. And our point was, we want to go back and reintroduce Americans to some of these forgotten stories that are the reason these men should be celebrated.
Well, I have to say, you know, I tell this story about myself over and over and over again. I've written all these books, and almost every single one that I've written, when I discover what I'm writing, when it hits me, I'm so ashamed I didn't know it before. And so by the grace of God, I put it in a book, and then I'm just trying to get other people to read it, to get as excited as I am about it. Because when you know these stories, folks, it changes you. When the first character, the first man in my book, Seven Men, is George Washington. If you just mm-hmm. read that chapter, you'll be ashamed that you didn't appreciate what an absolutely great hero this was. Boy, do we owe him. And that's just George Washington. When we come back, we'll hear more. The book is The American Story, Building the Republic. Tim Barton of Wall Builders is my guest. Right before my very eyes. Welcome back, folks. It's my privilege and joy to be speaking with Tim Barton. He's the head of Wall Builders. You need to check it out, wallbuilders.com. Tremendous resource. So the new book is The American Story, Building the Republic. And you said that in this book now, it's the continuation of The American Story, Part 1. You're telling the stories of the first seven presidents, all of whom were of the founding generation. They had lived through the Revolution. It's interesting because I think of Abraham Lincoln. In 1838, when he gives his speech, he's a young man, to the Springfield Young Men's Lyceum. It's one of the greatest speeches I've ever read. And he was a very young man in his late 20s when he gave it. But he talks about, even then, in 1838, that they're forgetting what the generation that had lived through the Revolution, that there are people now alive who don't remember that, and the danger of losing that fire, that passion for America, for liberty. He's already saying this in 1838. Nobody understood the founding better than Abraham Lincoln. But it's amazing to me that he is saying this in 1838. We are now, you know, coming up on 200 years after he wrote that. And we have, obviously, many of us forgotten this. So Wall Builders, you guys have done a heroic job in bringing these stories to America. And we're talking about the second volume in The American Story, Building the Republic. So who else do you write about in this new book?
Well, so one of the things I'd love to point out, one of the individuals we write about is Andrew Jackson. We finished with him. He's a seventh president. He was a young teenager in the American Revolution. He actually was a prisoner of war. He actually was cut with the saber. A British officer wanted Andrew Jackson to shine his boots. He was a prisoner of war. And Andrew Jackson, a 13, 14-year-old stubborn kid, says, "I'm not going to do it." And this British officer draws his sword, strikes down at Andrew Jackson. He raises his hand to try to defend himself, to keep himself alive. And the sword cuts through his hand, cuts his face. He carried those scars the rest of his life. But when he becomes president, it's interesting. He had been a general in the War of 1812. He was a very successful military commander, and he brought that with him into politics. When he was a U.S. senator from Tennessee, he actually at that time was being recruited to be a president. And he told the people recruiting him, he said, "I am not really fit for that level of public office." He said, "Really, I'm not even fit to be a senator." He said, "I am fit to lead rough men into battle where we do rough things," right? I mean, he's this warrior, and he's really good at going against enemies, but that's his mentality. The reason it matters is because he is the president that did the most to change the foundation of America. When George Washington left presidency, he delivered his farewell address, and he gave advice to all those coming to all Americans, but really all those coming after him, to John Adams, to Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, all these guys who he was kind of like a father figure on some level too. And he's trying to help encourage his friends in what would help them be successful. Andrew Jackson is the guy that when he becomes president, he changes the whole structure, where his goal was not to help America. His goal was to defeat the enemy. And he's the founder of the Democratic Party. And the enemy was his political opponent, John Quincy Adams. So when every other president had been elected president, they had appointed people to political positions who were competent. Andrew Jackson comes in and he says, "I don't care if they're competent or not. I just care what party they're from." Because in George Washington's administration, he had Federalists and Anti-Federalists. And that was the way it was under Adams and under Jefferson, and really under every single president up until Jackson. They had people of different parties, but they recognized if you're a competent person, you're good at your job, you love America, then you can do this job. And Andrew Jackson said, "No, I care about defeating the other side." And it's fascinating what he does, because he actually, for example, one of his campaign advisors, he puts in charge of the post office, Postmaster General. He made it a cabinet level position. He then instructs him that you're in charge, and so you can do what you want. And so, for example, if there's mail that you think shouldn't be delivered, then you can choose not to deliver that. Andrew Jackson was pro-slavery. And one of the things the post office did under Andrew Jackson's, during his presidency, under his leadership, is they decide that they don't want to deliver, especially in the southern states, any abolition mail. And so any kind of posters, any printouts from abolitionists, they literally destroyed it. And so you begin to see censorship. So you see the politicization of the presidency. You see a media control. You see censorship. It's amazing that what modern politics has become, it started under the leadership and example of Andrew Jackson. And as we go through the book, we highlight from all the presidents, there's things we can learn from them that, man, we want leaders who do certain kinds of things. But there's other times we look and go, you know what? There's things we should never do, or the things we don't want in a leader. We never want a leader to do these kind of things, because we can see the result of what those seeds produce. Those planted seeds grew a certain kind of crop or fruit, and it wasn't good fruit. We don't want that anymore. And as we're even looking now in the midst of political campaigns and in a coming presidency, it really should not be that complicated in my mind for most Americans. And yet, if we would just go back historically, if we would just, for example, follow the advice that was given to us by George Washington, or maybe advice from John Adams or Jefferson, if we just knew the advice they told us, we could once again restore so much that has been lost in America. But if we don't know our history, if we don't know the advice, the wisdom they passed on, then we won't be able to utilize that and help us succeed as a nation. So part of what we do is we want to tell the honest story, the good, the bad, and the ugly, but also we want to share the encouragement, the advice they gave of how we can help rebuild and make America strong once again.
I have to ask you, I know, you know, our mutual friend Glenn Beck has talked about this. Andrew Jackson was really bad in some ways. You've just referred to one of them. In some ways, he's a hero, and in other ways, not so much. Where does he come out ultimately for you? He's a very difficult figure to peg.
Yes. So he's a dichotomy because he is an incredibly important military commander. He has a lot of success. And, for example, like the War of 1812, the Battle of New Orleans, he did things that fundamentally were vital for American success. So America could not have succeeded in some areas without his leadership. But I would argue he is maybe the worst president in American history, even though, right, and again, I would go back to the default that he said he's not really fit to be president. He was correct. He was a president as if he was a general fighting against an enemy. And that's not the way to help America be a successful nation by treating somebody that has a disagreement with you as an enemy that you're trying to crush and destroy. So military commander, overall, I would say he was very important for America, did some very good things as a president, very, very bad president.
I want to come back to that. Folks, we are talking to Tim Barton of Wall Builders. I hope you're excited. The new book is The American Story. This is part two. The American Story part one came out a while ago. The new one is The American Story part two, Building the Republic. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I am speaking to Tim Barton of Wall Builders. The new book is called The American Story, Building the Republic. And we're talking about all of these figures, the first seven presidents. You talk about them in this book. And we just talked about Andrew Jackson, who is, he's a checkered figure, to use that term. He's complicated. He's kind of a maniac, in some ways fantastic, wonderful, in some ways terrible. It's interesting that he sort of thinks of himself as a wild man. He thinks of himself as not qualified in some ways for the presidency. And you were saying that he got that right. He had enough self-knowledge to understand himself.
He really did. He knew he had a very short fuse. And one of the things, it's really humorous, if you look up duels in American history, his name is always one of the ones you see, right, the president who was in these duels. And there's some outlets, some writers who have said he was in up to 100 duels. Well, we've not been able to document he was in nearly that many, but what we can document is he was in an awful lot of duels. He was shot. He actually killed people. He was the second in many duels. I mean, this guy, very short-tempered, very angry, very much was a fighter. And that was his attitude throughout much of his life. There wasn't a time where, you know, he kind of calmed down and he sombered and he just, you know, and kind of relaxed a little bit in his attitude. No, he pretty much was this way much of his life. And that doesn't, that doesn't help when you have a divided nation, politically speaking, and you have someone who is even more polarizing. That doesn't help the nation be successful in what he does. But, you know, backing up to the idea that he did some really good things, and then there's things that we go, man, he was really bad in this area. It's not unlike many figures we can look at in history where, you know, Winston Churchill is someone that if you look back to World War II, Winston Churchill was the man for the hour. His leadership was so needed in World War II. But if you study a lot of his life, he definitely had some moments where you're going, bro, what were you doing? Right. Like that. You had some really bad moments in your life. And yet he had some really incredible, important moments as well. And this is something that is so often true. In fact, as we go through these presidents, we outline this with many of them. Where there is a very distinct difference is George Washington is one of the very few individuals. When you look at political leaders or incredible leaders in general in history, most of them have a checkered past to some extent. George Washington is one of the very few individuals that if you look at him, it's really hard to find examples of any major moral failings or major moral flaws in his life. He was such an incredible, honorable person. Similar, if you track along, like a John Quincy Adams, another guy, it's really hard to find any significant major failing, moral failing or otherwise in his life. But most of us just don't know these stories anymore. And so we would highly encourage Americans to go back and study this. And again, part of the reason we want to do this is introduce people to American history. But also we know that there's a rising generation who is being taught to hate America, but they're being taught to hate America because they don't know what America really was about. They don't know who these people are, and they've believed a lie. The way you overcome a lie is with the truth, right? Jesus said, you will know the truth will make you free. We have to get back to knowing the truth, and that's why we've taken the time to go back and write these stories, helping reintroduce Americans to the truth of American history and who some of these incredible leaders actually were.
Well, it is absolutely vital, and I think things have to get really, really bad before most people will wake up. This is the theme for me, because I see things have gotten so bad in America, all kinds of people are waking up now, right now, finally, 5 minutes before it's too late. It is almost too late. Folks, be part of the solution. Check out wallbuilders.com. Read The American Story. These are now two volumes, so you can read my book if you can keep it. You've got to know these stories. They will bless you. Tim Barton, you and your dad and Wall Builders bless me. Thanks for all you guys do. Just a privilege.
Thanks so much.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.